really did struggle this year. A lot of stuff I wanted to talk about. I thought, I know people are going to bring up about the Feast of Tabernacles, but it's the high day, it's the first day. So I thought, I'm going to talk about that a little bit. And then some other things during the week about what's going on in the world. I know Tom, I talked to him. He's got at least one talk on prophecy. And I've told you guys many, many times, I'm not a prophet. But I see the suffering that's going on and all the pain people are going through. And I know the reasons behind a lot of that. And that's why I want to talk about some of them while we're here. Not to be down on suffering, but the good news is there's a way to alleviate and escape a lot of that pain and suffering. So, but for today, it is the first day of the Feast of Tabernacles. It's the high day. And I want to start with that. In Leviticus 23, verse 34, it says, "Speak to the children of Israel, saying, 'The 15th day of the 7th month shall be the Feast of Tabernacles for 7 days to the Lord.'" How many days are we here?
Eight.
Yeah, but it says for 7 days. Now, I'm not going to get into real detail, and I know a lot of you, this is old stuff. One of the things I see I didn't do,
we all need to review it,
is I didn't put where the screen breaks are on there, so I'll put that in. All right. Verse 35, "On the first day there shall be a holy convocation." Well, that's today, that's why we're here. "You shall do no customary work on it. For 7 days you shall offer an offering made by fire to the Lord." Maybe we'll talk about how do you do that today with no temple, no tabernacle, no priesthood, no... But it says we're supposed to be doing something, so that might be a topic for somebody. "On the 8th day you shall have a holy convocation, and you shall offer an offering made by fire to the Lord. It is a sacred assembly, and you shall do no customary work on it. These," verse 37, "these are the feasts of the Lord which you shall proclaim to be holy convocations, to offer an offering made by fire to the Lord, a burnt offering and a grain offering, a sacrifice and drink offerings, everything on its day. Besides the Sabbath of the Lord, besides your gifts, besides all your vows, and besides all your freewill offerings which you give to the Lord." Now, there's different congregations and they do things differently. Some do Torah readings, some don't do Torah readings. They have a sermon and a sermonette, and some that do Torah readings do the modern one-year schedule. Some do the ancient three-year schedule. But for those on a three-year schedule, what we're doing right now is going through Leviticus. And I tell people, I'm a little bit of a nerd, weirdo, whatever. That is one of my favorite books of the Bible. Now you have people here. I know there's people in the room, their favorite book is maybe Revelation, because there's a lot of prophecy. Maybe some of the prophets would say, why Leviticus? Well, it's really kind of simple. Leviticus is written to people that are serving God, and it's his instructions for, number one, how you serve him and how you worship him. It's the purpose, the main theme of the whole book. Well, what's everybody doing here? What do you go every Sabbath to church? What do you? So that's why I like it, because it's not the, you know, okay, if it's not Leviticus, you can't do it. That's not what I'm saying. But I mean, this is the book dedicated for his priest, how to serve him and how to serve his people, how you worship him. And one of the things in Leviticus, it starts out with, is the burnt offerings. There's multiple offerings that were listed here, but I used to, before I started studying things like this, just kind of piqued my interest. I'd get to all the offerings and say, we can't do them today. So do let everybody old enough to remember, they used to advertise it on TV, Evelyn Woods Speed Reading Course. Yep. So I'd get to that kind of stuff. I'm reading the words, but it's zip, 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 zip. No application to me. And just skip on right through it. And somebody says, really? You like that kind of stuff? Why would you even care if you can't do it? Well, see, for everything in the Bible, I don't care where in the Bible it is, there's something physical and there's something spiritual that goes along with it. He tells, how do you train kids? You teach them some physical things so that mentally, when they progress and they get older and they get more understanding and more knowledge, then they've got, it's almost like an instinct to them. They're learning as they're doing. When you were in school, what were you doing? You were learning, you were doing things, and then you would learn from doing the things. And then when you got to something, maybe you had never even done it before, but you could take all that knowledge, the things that you had learned and picked up, and you could figure it out and work your way through it. And that's what God's doing with all of us. There's not stuff in the Bible about when you go to McDonald's, is it okay to have a fat burger? You know, McDonald's in the Bible, where do you get that? But you can learn things as you go, and then you take even modern things that didn't exist, and you can take that application. So when it talks about sacrifice, when I'm bringing this up, is when it's talking about this, they were supposed to learn something by doing it. Multiple sacrifices. Everybody just dumps all the sacrifices into one pot. Oh, it's killing the animals. But it talks here about a burnt offering, a grain offering, a sacrifice and drink offering. You know, everything on this day is, there's multiple offerings that were taking place on this day. And every day that the temple was in operation, and people were doing and participating, especially on the holy days and the seasons of the holy days, the entire week. So anyhow, verse 39, Leviticus 23:39 says, also on the 15th day of the seventh month, when you have gathered in the fruit of the land, you shall keep a feast to the Lord for 7 days. And on the first day there shall be a Sabbath rest, and on the eighth day a Sabbath rest. So I got to verse 44. Okay. So today's a high day of Sabbath. And the eighth day, next Wednesday, is another high day of Sabbath. No working on those days. It's special. So instead of just telling everybody, thou shalt not, what is God doing when he sets aside these 2 days, Wednesdays this year, two Wednesdays, and says this is the Sabbath? What are we supposed to learn from doing it? So I'm going to start out by peeking with a lot of questions, and maybe some of the speakers will cover this stuff, some of the studies in the evenings, we can talk about it. But the goal would be for everybody to get more of an idea. And that's why I said for tonight, sharing things that you see, things that you understand, questions that you have that you don't know the answers to. That not that we're going to have all the questions to every, all the answers to every question that there is, but when we can get together and go through things and share it with each other, we got a better chance of coming to some kind of meaningful conclusion. Verse 40, and you shall take for yourselves on the first day, so that's today, the fruit of beautiful trees and branches of palm trees and boughs of leafy trees and willows of the brook. What? On the Feast of Tabernacles? Goes and lists four things that we're supposed to take. And what are you supposed to do with those four things? Back up, verse 40. And you shall take for yourselves on the first day today the fruit of beautiful trees, the branches of palm trees, the boughs of leafy trees, and the willows of the brook, and you shall rejoice before the Lord your God for 7 days. So you're supposed to take these things and use it somehow to rejoice before God for 7 days at the Feast of Tabernacles. Kind of strange. I never was at a worldwide service. Some people say God spared me from that. I think he just was protecting me because they would have kicked my butt out. I did go to one of their Bible studies and wasn't interested in that when they started opening up and letting the public in. But I have been in Church of God International and a couple others. We've gone and visited services and that. But I got to admit, even down here when we've gone to other groups, like when the Jewish calendar started a day or two early, sometime, you know, and this is over probably 15 years ago, we'd say, hey, we're down here early enough. Let's just go over to one of their services and see what. Never seen any of this going on. Never even heard anybody talking about it. But it's commanded that if you keep the Feast of Tabernacles, you're supposed to be doing this. Verse 41, and you shall keep it as a feast to the Lord for 7 days in the year. It shall be a statute forever in your generations. You shall celebrate it in the seventh month. So this isn't something that ends. I never saw a calendar that you look at it and say, well, what's tomorrow? Oh, forever is over. And then maybe that was the next day you come and say, well, today forever ends. And then the day, next day, well, forever is gone. You know, the calendar is perpetual. It continues on. It's forever. Even when God's kingdom is set up, it's not going to, okay, everything's over. Go home. Forget it. This is forever throughout all of our generations. It never ends. Is it weird? Yes. Is it strange? Yes. But really, when you look at the Bible and you read, Israel was kind of a strange bunch. It says he didn't pick them because they were the strongest, the greatest, the richest, the mightiest, the most beautiful, the most handsome. He picked them because nobody else would want them. They were stiff-necked, hard-hearted, kind of like the least, but because of who their God was, he made them into something great. Ever have anybody ask you, who do you think you are? You think you're somebody special? Well, everybody here is somebody special, not because of your physical or your mental capabilities. You're special because God chose you, and that makes you special. Above all the rest of the earth, yes. That sounds like you got a huge ego. Oh, no, I know I ain't so special. You get out of the shower in the morning, you look in front of the mirror, and you say, who is that weirdo sitting there, standing there? Ain't nothing special about that, but because of who my daddy is, you best not mess with me or anybody else that he has a relationship with. He makes us special. And in verse 42, it says, you shall dwell in booths for 7 days. All who are native Israelites shall dwell in booths, that your generations may know that I made the children of Israel dwell in booths and brought them out of the land of Egypt. I'm the Lord your God. So Moses declared to the children of Israel the feast of the Lord. That's what today is. That's why we're here. And oh man, ain't it a burden? Isn't it just, this bondage? I don't know about you. I don't especially like the drive and the work and getting everything ready and all the work that goes in and organizing and all dealing with all of that garbage. But it's nothing compared to when we're there and we start like today. It's sort of like, I guess, a woman in childbirth. There's a lot of pain goes on there, but as soon as that baby's born, that's not, that was nothing. Oh, look at what we have here. Well, that's what it is for all of God's holy days. Yes, work, and you got to put some money away, second tithe. You got to plan. You got to tell your customers if you're self-employed or your boss, if you got a job. If you got animals, you got to arrange for somebody to take care of it. There's work for everybody, but once you're there and once it's over with, and once you, and some of you did a lot of driving to get here. Others, you had to get on those big tin cans in the air and put up with TSA and all of their nonsense to get here and the government scrutiny. That's just the taste of what's coming. But it's nothing. It's worth it. It's fantastic. It's a gift that he's given us. So we're dwelling, everybody here, you're dwelling in some kind of a temporary dwelling this week. What else did God tell us to do? Why did he tell us to take four different things and use it to celebrate him? So I'm going to go through it a little bit, give you an opinion, an idea. First is an etrog. It's a citrus, it's a fruit, comes from Israel. What's so special about it? What's this got to do with God? And why did he, this one of the things, one of the fruit of beautiful trees? Well, we've cut these up before and ate some of them, and yeah, they're okay, but it's not even my favorite fruit, but this is one of the ones that's grown in Israel. I ordered it, and that's where it came from. They ship it in a little protected box and stuff. Why this? Well, this citrus, this etrog, it's got, if you cut it open and you eat some of it, you'll learn two things. It has both taste, it's sweet, and there's a fragrance the minute you cut it open. Like if you cut open an orange or a lemon or something like that, you smell it right away. So taste and fragrance. Some people compare it to, like, there's four different kinds of people out there. If you're going to do in just broad categories. Four different kinds of believers. Taste and fragrance. What about learning and good deeds? Not only do believers learn, once you learn, you're supposed to do something with it, which are deeds and your works, things that you're actually doing with the knowledge that God gives you. So that's, maybe this represents something like that. Next, the rest of them, I just put them in here, palm. The palm has taste in its fruit, like dates grow on palm trees. But there's no fragrance. What about believers, another category of believers? The fragrance is like learning, but the taste is like when you do good deeds or somebody does good deeds for you, you can feel it, you can taste it. So you got fragrance, but no taste. Knowledge, but nothing good comes out of the knowledge. You don't take that knowledge and use it for helping others or doing other good things for other people. Ever run across anybody like that in those places that they call churches? Or even messianic synagogues, things like that? Yep, there's some people like that in there. The myrtle. It's got a fragrance. You can smell it. But no taste. Good deeds. But not a lot of learning. A little light on the learning, light on the knowledge. But the little bit of knowledge that they do have, there's taste, there's fragrance. The willow. Nobody here, hopefully, is like that. No fragrance, no taste. No knowledge, no good deeds. They just kind of go along and they're there, but don't really do anything with some of the things that are available that God wants to share with them. But at Tabernacles, we bind all of these four things, and they're all unique. And God, so I don't know if those explanations are, it doesn't explain why in the Bible, it just says do it. You know, there are other things. One of the reasons I even talk about this, there are other things that tells you in the Bible, tells us in the Bible. Do it or don't do it. Doesn't tell us why, just says do it. But can you imagine what ancient Israel, when he tells them, says, when you go to the bathroom, take an instrument with you out into the wilderness and bury it, cover it up. He just said, do it. He didn't explain why and say, well, someday you're going to have something called a microscope. And then there's going to be bacteria that you could see under the microscope. And those bacteria will attack you and give you diseases. The only explanation really at all that he gives, other than the instructions to go out with a shovel or something and cover it up, is he says that he's holy, and when he walks through the camp, he's holy. In other words, he don't want to step in it. You go to some third world countries, and there's no sanitation, and that's why there's all kinds of disease. You got to watch where you're stepping. I've seen stuff out on the sidewalk, they'll go to the bathroom. Oh, yeah, you don't got to go to a third world country anymore.
California.
So any big city, basically. Any big city. The first big camp I saw was this summer. This June, we drove up to Wisconsin. We're going through Chicago, and right off the interstate, there's tents after tents after. I mean, you could throw a rock and hit them. And most people are saying, oh, that's dangerous. Oh, that's homeless. And one of the things I'm thinking about is that ain't very clean. They don't have a bunch of porta potties on the sidewalk in Chicago. But you don't have to go to a third world country anymore to see that. He just said, do it. Sometimes God tells us something. It's for our own good. Later on, we can understand it through knowledge and study and application. And you can see the wisdom. Some things he doesn't explain. He just says, don't do it or do this or don't do that, whatever. And sometimes there's something, because we don't understand, we don't even like it. So we say, that's stupid. That doesn't make any sense. Or, I don't like it. Like, I'm not going to get into all of it today, but there was one law that God had that I really had a problem with. And I even told them, you know, talking to them, I said, that's dumb. Until you explain it to me, I ain't going to do it. Boy, I'm really lucky that he didn't smite me for my rebellion and stuff. But I reached a point in time and I said, all right, there's no getting around it. I'm supposed to be doing this. So I started to do it. And then in my reasoning or whatever, it was like, hey, do you see this? I'm actually doing it. I don't know why you said to do this. It don't make no sense to me. But I'm doing it. And then I asked him, I says, please show me why. Please give me the understanding so that I can understand you more. Why you would tell me to do this? And until I got to that point, he didn't give me the physical reasons why. And it's like, oh, wow. Okay, now I get it. And by the way, most people don't do those things today either, because that's just, you went down, one of the things we went down is we went down to the Chabad house. I talked about this recently at church. Mary and I, and talked to some Hasidic rabbi saying, you know, why? I don't understand this law. Why? And he says, well, you know, that's not even kept today. I thought, well, I mean, the Jews ignore some of the laws that God says? They don't even do them today? I said, yeah, but it says to do this. I don't care what you're doing today. And I realized that everything, this was 20 years ago, and it's, everything they do is just based off of tradition. But back to this. He tells us to live in temporary dwellings, and he tells us to take these four things, and he says, to use it and celebrate Him. And the first day, take off. No work, shopping, distractions. Just get rid of it. Reserve that for me for a reason. And the eighth day, do it again. And, oh, by the way, don't forget this part. Celebrate. Have a good time. Don't be miserable. Don't be bored. If you're miserable, if you're bored, you're doing something right. If it don't feel good, if you don't look forward to it, you're not doing it right. So figure out what He wants you to do. And remember, this is something you're supposed to be doing so that you have a good time. Mary's trying to teach the kids. Now, some of you sitting here, you were like this and smaller, and you've been to some of the kids. And Mallory, I think she's over there with the kids. She's helping Mary. But Mallory was one of the little ones. And she understands. She remembers. She had good times. This was something special to her. And this is something, you know, it's even more important for them to have these memories and for them to have the good experiences and for them. And I know Tom and Narda and others that are here, that's what you're doing. You're making sure that your grandchildren are having some of it. You don't want them to miss out. You make sacrifices yourself so that they're able to do these things. You don't just show up for yourself so you can have a good time for yourself. You're making sure that anybody that wants to come can come, and if there's anything, you want that to be passed on throughout the generations. But back to this. Here's an example, Nehemiah. Oh, I should have had that up when I'm going through. I forgot. At 1 o'clock this morning, I thought, okay, I'm done. I printed it out, and then normally I'd make a few notes and draw some lines. I know next slide, so I'm sorry I didn't prepare enough for today. But that's the four species. I should have had that up there. Come on. All right. Nehemiah. Chapter 8, verse 14. Here's an example when they were doing this. In verse 14 through 18, it says, "And they found written in the law, which the Lord had commanded by Moses, that the children of Israel should dwell in booths during the feast of the seventh month." So this is the seventh month, and they're reading, they find the book of the law, they bring it out, and they're reading it. And they say, oh man, they had forgotten all of the stuff that God said. And as they're reading the law, they get to Leviticus and other places. They see all of these things that the knowledge was gone. It was forgotten. They were in captivity. So verse 15, "And that they should announce and proclaim in all of their cities and in Jerusalem, saying, go out to the mountains and bring olive branches and branches of oil trees, myrtle branches and palm branches and branches of leafy trees to make booths as it is written. Then the people went out and brought them and made for themselves booths, each one of them, on the roof of his house or in their courtyards or in the courts of the house of God and in the open square of the water gate, in the open square of the gate of Ephraim. So the whole assembly of those who had returned from captivity made booths and sat under the booths, since the days of Joshua the son of Nun, until that day the children of Israel had not done so. And there was very great gladness." There was satisfaction, there was happiness, there was rejoicing. Verse 18, "Also day by day, from the first day until the last day, he read from the book of the law of God, and they kept the feast 7 days, and on the eighth day there was a sacred assembly according to the prescribed manner." Okay, so here they went out and did it. Now, they used some of these materials for making booths, but it was, and that's part of the celebrating, that's part of, you know, a use for them. But it's not limited to just that. Let's look in the millennium. Zechariah chapter 14, verse 16. Start reading. It says, "And it shall come to pass that everyone who is left of all the nations which came up against Jerusalem shall go up from year to year to worship the King, the Lord of hosts, and to keep the Feast of Tabernacles." So this is prophecy. This is future. "And it shall be that whichever of the families of the earth do not come up to Jerusalem to worship the King, the Lord of hosts, on them there will be no rain." So everybody's going to keep this, whether you were at school or at work and telling people, they say, "Well, where are you going to be? What do you mean you're not going to be here next week? Where are you going to be? What are you going to be doing?" Everybody's going to be doing this. Nobody's going to question, "Well, that's kind of strange. What is that?" And some people say, "Well, we're going on vacation." "What are you going to do on your vacation?" "Well, are you going to talk in Florida?" Or wherever it is that you're going. "Oh, Florida. Okay, to hear that part. Yeah, that sounds like fun. Have a good time." Hit the mouse wrong. Okay, back to Zechariah. Okay. Next, ask a question. Why did God instruct us to live in temporary dwellings? Now, there's a physical reason for all of this. Say 2,000 years ago, 3,000 years ago, how many Holiday Inns and Radissons and Super 8s and Motel 6s do you figure there were in Jerusalem? Well, there was a couple of inns, small places. But what do you do when you've got maybe 500,000 people living in Jerusalem, and you got 3 million on the way? Where are they all going to stay? Well, okay, some of them are going to go camping. Nothing wrong with that. But what are you going to do with maybe some of the older people, or maybe some of the ones with young children, very young, special needs people? What are you going to do? Oh, all who are native, we go back to Leviticus 23, all who are native born shall dwell in booths. Well, if you're dwelling in a booth on the roof of your house or in a courtyard or wherever it is, what's that do with your place? Guess what? It's available. So that's some of the physical reason for it. But it's not limited just to physical. In 2 Corinthians 5:1, it says, "For we know that if our earthly house, this tent, is destroyed, we have a building from God, a house not made with hands, eternal in the heavens. For in this we groan earnestly, desiring to be clothed with our habitation, which is from heaven." You know, we're all dwelling in booths right now. These bodies, they get old, they wear out. A lot of times they're wearing out, and you're not even old. At least yourself in your own mind, you don't think you're old, but... You know, sometimes I wake up, and if I've had to do some construction work on some of my rentals or whatever, oh, man, I feel like I'm 80 then. Other times, just doing normal stuff, I got to stop and take breaks, take a rest. Israel saw it this year. He's told me when we're loading the trailer up and doing some work, and he's helping me. And I said, "Hey, Israel, I got to take a break here." And he says, I don't remember his exact words, but it was like, "Hey, you just never stopped before. You were just plowing through, doing it, and now we had to take some breaks." But just like our bodies are temporary, he wants us to know that that's part of the dwelling in temporary dwellings for the Feast of Tabernacles, which pictures this millennium, his kingdom. But they're also holy. Each one of you has a tabernacle. That's one of the things when God says do things and don't do things in the Bible, is to keep us from defiling our tabernacle. So that he has to leave, so he has to withdraw his Holy Spirit from us because we just defiled the tabernacle. But where are we supposed to observe? So did I mess up here? 2 Corinthians All right. 2 Corinthians 5:4, continuing on, it says, "For we who are in this tent groan, being burdened, not because we want to be unclothed, but further clothed, that morality must be swallowed up by life." So the bodies are temporary. He gives them to us for a reason, because it's not like you're going to go to the cemetery someday. And I've actually saw a tombstone like this, all dressed up and nowhere to go. You know, so somebody thought they were going to float off to heaven, but, you know, there was a debate we can read about in the New Testament about between the Sadducees and the Pharisees, and one didn't believe in resurrection. They thought, this is it. This is the best God has to offer us. Continuing on here in Deuteronomy chapter 12 and verse 5, it says, "But you shall seek the place which the Lord your God chooses out of all your tribes to put his name for his dwelling place, and there you shall go." So every year, people, we got to make a decision. Where are we going to go? Where did God place his name? Where should we go for the feast? Where do we go to celebrate these holy days? Verse 6, "There you shall take your burnt offerings, your sacrifices, your tithes, and the heave offerings of your hand, your vowed offerings, your freewill offerings, and the firstborn of your herds and your flocks, and your checkbooks." Or your cash. Federal Reserve notes. That's what it says, right? There's a lot of different types of offerings that were supposed to be taken with them. Has anybody ever just said, why all of these? Why not just a few animals? Or why not some money, and then we'll go buy the animals when we get there? Why these different things? So today you're going to get more questions than you're going to get answers. Verse 7, "And there you shall eat before the Lord your God, and you shall," here it is again, "you shall rejoice in all which you do to put your hand, you and your households in which the Lord your God has blessed you." These things are all so that you can have a fantastic time and enjoy yourselves. Yes, you're coming. The main thing is you're coming to worship God at a time that he has set aside, that he has called holy. But all of these things that he's telling you to do, you shall be rejoicing and having a fantastic time with him. Now, it's kind of easy to figure out, oh, okay, if I bring along, you know, a few hundred or a few thousand dollars in what we call cash today, yeah, I'll give some of that to God, and then I'm going to go have a great time. I'm going to go to Shell Island. I'm going to go on the airboat. I'm going to go on the roller or the zip lines or the, you know, these attractions or whatever. But different kinds of offerings and things, what's that got to do with rejoicing? That doesn't sound like a lot of fun to me. But we're supposed to do it when we observe the feast. So some of the physical things, like I said, you can't do it today. But what are you supposed to get out of it? How is this supposed to help you praise God and to feel great? To be uplifting? Nobody, we don't want anybody to go home and say, "Boy, we had a miserable time." We always look for the positive, right? One year we were down here and there was red tide and there was it says it only rained once. Started on the first day and it rained just about the entire time, but it only rained once. It just never stopped. It was kind of hard to do some of the rejoicing things with that. Or the red tide a few years ago, you go out there and you're coughing and you're gagging and it burns your eyes and it burns your nose. Kind of hard to do, but even when those things that you maybe didn't want to go walk down the beach, there was other things we could do to have a great time. And actually, that was one of the better things, because there was more like the rocket lanes. I think that year we went down there twice, and there were things we did together, and we stayed in the room, and we talked in the meeting rooms, and we sang and praised, and it was maybe the weather and the elements sucked, but the spiritual part of it was higher that year, I think. So what are we supposed to bring to the feast? Verse 11, Deuteronomy 12, verse 11. Then there will be the place where the Lord your God chooses to make his name abide. There you shall bring all that I command you, your burnt offerings, your sacrifices, your tithes, the heave offerings of your hand, and all your choice offerings which you vow to the Lord. Deuteronomy 12:17. Can you do it at home? Is it okay just to stay home? Now, I'm not talking about if you simply can't do it. Maybe there's some medical condition, emergency. Maybe there's just no, it's been a really hard year. Maybe there's no money to do it. You know, I'm not talking about that. I'm just talking about, can you put this stuff together and you do it at home? Verse 17 says, you may not eat within your gates the tithe of your grain or your new wine or your oil or the firstlings of your herd or your flock, any of your offerings which you vow, of your freewill offerings, or the heave offerings of your hand. So there's some physical reasons why he says don't keep it at home. If you can't make it, you're supposed to put it up and keep it. And there's reasons for that. I'll just make it really simple. So you only got half of what it's going to take to go. Well, if you consume it all, next year you'll have half again. Consume it all, next year you'll have half again. Put it aside, and sooner or later you're going to be able to get there. Okay? But continue on in this. Deuteronomy chapter 14, verse 22. Start there. It says, you shall truly tithe all the increase of your grain that the field produces year by year, and you shall eat before the Lord your God in the place which he chooses to make his name abide. The tithe of your grain and your new wine and your oil and the firstborn of your herds and your flocks, that you may learn to fear the Lord your God always. But if the journey is too long for you, that you are not able to carry the tithe, or the place where the Lord your God chooses to put his name is too far from you, then when the Lord your God has blessed you, then you shall exchange it for money. You shall take some of the money in your hand and go to the place which the Lord your God chooses. So always, over and over again, we're supposed to be asking the question, where has God chose? Where should we go? Where is, with the knowledge and the intuition and the studying we've done, where is the place that we're supposed to be? And that's where you go and you worship him. Verse 26, and you shall spend that money for whatever your heart desires, for oxen or sheep, for wine or similar drink, or for whatever your heart desires. You shall eat there before the Lord your God, and you shall rejoice, you and your household. So here it is again. Have a fantastic time. Make memories. Rejoice. Feel good. Because you're worshiping God and you're going where he tells you to go. Let's look, kind of finish up here, how important the feast was to Jesus. Are you sure? I know. Miriam didn't call him Jesus. But get off into all that. But let's look at how important it was to him. The last year of his life, the last Feast of Tabernacles that he observed as a human being. John chapter 7, verse 1 says, and after these things Jesus walked in Galilee, for he did not want to walk in Judea because the Jews sought to kill him. So the government was after his butt. FEMA turned him in to the Department of Homeland Security, and they opened a case on him, and then the FBI got involved, And they decided that he was one of these radicals that actually believed what God said. He was a threat to all of them. Just like even outside of Sabbath holy days and things, parents that actually think that their children belong to them and that they have a duty to safeguard them and keep them from being brainwashed and perverted at the government training institutes. So they go to a school board meeting thinking that they're going to change the school board, and they say, "You guys are terrorists. We're going to have the FBI investigate you." Except this is what they did on a broad scale. They say, "We've got to take this guy out." They wanted him dead. You can't allow truth to actually take place. Somebody else might hear him and believe it. So let's get rid of the problem. But the Jews sought to kill him. Verse 2. Now the Jews' Feast of Tabernacles was at hand, and his brothers therefore said to him, "Depart from here and go into Judea, that your disciples may also see the works that you're doing. For no one does anything in secret while he himself seeks to be known openly. If you do these things, show yourself to the world, for even his brothers did not believe in him." Sometimes it's hard when your own family doesn't understand what you're doing. They don't get it. They might even try and rescue you from some dangerous occultic, you know, you actually believe what the Bible says. But it's something real, and we all experience it. Some of us got big families, so you're not the only one. Some of you, maybe you're the only one in this family. And some of you, in those days there was no king, and everybody did what was right in their own eyes, and some of us have to experience some of that. Like Israel made a comment, he's got two other siblings that are still alive, so there's three kids, his parents, they kept the Sabbath, the holy days. Maybe he'll talk about it if any of you are interested. His dad was in prison camps and persecuted for his faith and beaten and tortured. But his father's three living children are each keeping the holy days this fall. Some of them haven't done it for a long, long time. But three different calendars, three different days. Everybody doing what's right in their own sight instead of just saying, "Hey, we got to figure this out. We got to sit down. We got to talk about this." But back to this. His own brothers rejected him and didn't even believe in him. Verse 6. Then Jesus said to them, "My time has not come yet, but your time is always ready. The world cannot hate you, but it hates me because I testify that its works are evil." I think it's a lot more evil today than it was then. It's harder today. And those kids that are in that next room, if we don't, everybody doesn't help that can help, and the parents and the grandparents that can have influence on them, if they don't teach them now, so that they know deep down in their hearts, and maybe they don't have all the intricacies and all of the details and understand all of the prophecy, but they have that relationship. And everything I'm talking about today, knowledge is good, but the knowledge ain't going to do you no good when it really comes down to when it really counts. If you don't have the relationship, most people will crumble. You won't have the strength. You won't be able to draw on him for strength, support, the love. To know something on paper is one thing, but in your hearts and in your minds is something completely different. Verse 8 says, "You go up to this feast. I'm not yet going to this feast, for my time has not fully come." So he says, did he go? Yes. But there was a plan. God had a plan. He understood it. Nobody else in his family did. Verse 9. And when he had said these things, he remained in Galilee. But when his brothers had gone up, then he also went up to the feast, not openly, but as it were in secret. Then the Jews sought him at the feast and said, "Where is he?" And there was much complaining among the people concerning him. Some said, he is good. Others said, no, on the contrary, he deceives the people. Anybody ever been accused of that? You know, I talk about how probably everybody here is a refugee and a dissident from someplace else. You know? Oh, they're a deceiver. Oh, they're wrong. Oh, they... Verse 13. However, no one spoke openly of him for fear of the Jews. Now about the middle of the feast, Jesus went up into the temple and taught. So I'm going to end with this question. What do you think he taught? What did he teach? His life is in danger. They're looking for him to kill him. Much more than, oh, the FBI's got a warrant out for you. And, hey, we know this guy or this lady. The last several years, they've gone down to Laguna Beach or Panama City Beach, and they stay there, and they go down to these other dissident groups, and they get together, so let's go down there and check it out. Maybe we can snatch them while they're there. They're only going to throw us in jail when the time comes. Hopefully, we can avoid that, but if that's what happens, that's what happens. Him, different. They want to kill him. So what did he teach? What does it mean? What's the feast all about? Why are you here today? Why did you put your life on hold, whatever you do normally, and get together and get with others, and I'll pitch in, and I'll help each other, and drive and go some distance to show up? Why are we here? That's the question. Why did God want you here specifically? Is this something you're supposed to learn? Is this something you're supposed to share? Is it uplifting? Are you helping others celebrate? What is it? I can't tell you. I don't know. But I know somebody that can tell you. So please, sometime today, before it's sundown, get down on your knees and ask him, why or what is it that I am supposed to do? To celebrate, to have a good time, to rejoice, and to serve you. Those four things. And then, whatever it is, do it. Because we're living in a time when we can still do these things. And I hope I'm wrong. But it's going to get, in the very least, economically, it's going to get harder and harder and harder to accomplish this. And the government is dumb on purpose, and they're not that dumb. It's a plan and it's intentional. And Tom was talking to me. He told me he sees suffering. I don't know what God is. He says, I know that, you know, he told me he knows that there's some things he's been shown he wants to share. And I know Larry's got some stuff too. And maybe it's for them, maybe it's for us, maybe it's for all of us. But the important thing is for each one of us to understand what it is that we are supposed to be doing and why he called us. And maybe you're not going to have this great revelation and now all knowledge comes to you and you understand everything and it all fits together perfectly. But you're here this week for a specific time at a specific place to do something specific. I think at least it's reasonable to ask why and what for that. So welcome. I'm glad you're here. Let's spend some time together and let's have a great time rejoicing and worshiping God.